Hot round! Red 7, Red 7, Red 7! Don!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what Red 7 means.
Hot round!
I don't. What is hot round?
Will you just go stand on the other side, please?
Billy Bob! This is it! The man who got us here, you ready?
You don't think that lame ass play where I run downfield and act like I'm lost is gonna work, do you?
Then he pivots, fakes, chucks the big bomb halfway down the field to our hopefully still wide open tailback. I call it the annexation of Puerto Rico.
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch.
I need that ball. Get me the ball.
You need the ball.
Get me the ball.
Get you the ball.
Are you gonna get me the
ball? I'll get you the ball. I
hope he didn't kill somebody.
When we add up all those inches, that's gonna make the difference between winning and losing. Between living and dying.
I got a whole lot of money. Y'all it for me. Bottle key popping that water bad jacket. Yeah, it's a party.
This is 11 Personnel. I'm Nick Roush. He's Adam Luckett, and we are 1 week away from National Signing Day. Can we just call it National Signing Day?
Early Signing Day is what I've been calling it.
I
think the new term is ESP. People have been calling it Early Signing Period. But it's really not a period. It's really one day.
Yeah.
And then you have the late day in February, the old original day.
I mean, technically...
But this one has taken over. This is, for all intents and purposes,
right,
the signing day.
Because it's early signing period, but it's all on that one.
Well, day. What's messing us up right now is that they had the extra bye week during the season.
Right, and it's pushed everything back. So there's only 2.5 active weeks of recruiting.
Right.
Give or take. So...
And then you got to think those teams in conference championship games are even more time crunch.
They got 17 days.
Right.
Yeah. If that. No. It had 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
Only 10 days. Kentucky and them, they got to be 17. But.
And then coaching-wise, people hiring coaches, it's even more of a mess. So.
Well, I mean, that just shows, like, yesterday Stoops was in Detroit, Cincinnati. He's in Charlotte this morning. He's going back to Columbus, see Mike Drennan tonight. A lot of moving parts. He has no time for nothing. And I think
they got a nice jet though.
Yeah, it is a nice jet. Nice jet. And at least they're big, like Detroit to Cincinnati. That's a quick, 45-minute flight tops?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm sure, hell, you could probably even fly commercial at that point. I mean, you know, I'm sure he's not, but still. I mean,
drive time, you could probably get to Lexington from Detroit in under 6 hours.
Yeah, I mean, he ain't got time for that, right, but still, that, yeah.
It's not super far. They're not going coast to coast.
Right, exactly. So they were busy yesterday. He was talking about the Belt Bowl today, him and Justin Fuente. You want to talk about...
How was that? I didn't get to see it.
I would have been just furious if I was one of them, because they basically showed up for... The press conference lasted 15 minutes, and they did one-on-one interviews afterwards, but it was a lot of moving and shaking to be down there for an hour, essentially. And just, you know, glad hand. But, you know, that's why they pay him a bunch of money.
Did the Belk Bowl commissioner have one of those fancy sports coats?
No. He said he was the former TCU AD, though. And Fuente was their OC back then.
Yes, he was, for Gary Patterson. So, Andy Dalton.
Oh. Small world.
That's how he got the Memphis job.
Yeah.
Andy Dalton's team.
And didn't realize, too, that Barry Odom was at Memphis with Fuente. Because a lot of people were talking about him going to be the DC for Fuente, but instead he's promoting a guy who he's keeping a Bud Foster guy.
He is.
Yeah.
A guy that played at Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
Young guy.
Hamilton. So, but they weren't all the other Bud Foster guys go.
Yes, they are. There's the defensive line coach, I think last name Howells. He came over with Beamer and all them.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he's been there for
35 years.
Yeah.
And then
there's a secondary coach they're losing, and then a guy that I believe Fuente brought in was originally receiver coach, moving to running back. He's gone too. So they're having a little bit of a staff shakeup.
Yeah, right before the bowl game. Great time. Great time to do it for Kentucky.
And Kentucky's having a little bit of staff shakeup too.
Yeah. Would you say that every OVC coach comes from the University of Kentucky?
Starting to seem that way, isn't it?
Yeah. Walt, I forgot Walt's last name already. He's just
Walt Wells.
Yeah. He's a Walt, though.
He looks like a Walt.
Yeah.
I love Walt Wells' hair.
Well, I love any man's hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But.
He's a big visor guy, though.
Big visor guy.
Big visor guy. I'm you got to sell that guy. Lettuce off.
Yes.
Just like Lane beautiful. Kiffin. Which, so night. Let's just go into coaching carousel. I guess we'll start where we were with Dean Hood, because that's a significant loss for Kentucky.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we talked about him last week or 2 weeks ago about how the fake punt, how that hadn't happened since he's been here, and how mm-hmm. good of a job he's done, how he's turned what was kind of a weakness at times during the Mark Stoops era into a strength of the football team. And that's a blow. And I think he was a guy, you know, that old dog in the room that Stoops yeah. could probably go to and if ask for advice on, you know, whatever. You know, that stinks. You know, you hate to lose him, but I think it's a great hire by Murray State.
I think Stoops knew going in, like 2-3 years max was all he was going to get out of Hood.
Or it could have just been if an FCS job, kind of a good one that I'm interested in, I'm probably going to take it.
Right. Like that was never going to be kind of a long-term deal. I just hope that whoever he hires to be special teams coordinator, I know with offensive and defensive coordinators, we can quickly assemble a short list. I don't think you really can with special teams. Right. But
usually I have a pretty good sense, or I can come up with a list that I think might be matches. This one right here, I'm not really sure what he wants to do. Recruiting-wise, they feel fine. I don't know if he really wants to go out and get a recruiter.
Yeah, Dean was a big – he just did their preferred walk-on program.
I think really. It's important to remember that they have a quality controls coach, Louis Matasakis, who's really kind of like the special teams kind of guru behind the scenes, I think.
And Hood would get the Aussies, but Matasakis worked with them.
He's the kicker's coach
for
all intents and purposes.
Right.
So I don't know. I think he was a really, really shrewd hire by Mark Stoops, and it really, really worked out well. And I'm sure he was a guy that Brad White leaned on too, as being a first-time defense coordinator.
And I think that, like, obviously, we're looking at Max Duffy and Matt Patton and the success that the Aussies have had.
Yeah, you hate to lose that pipeline too.
You right? want to keep those guys coming back, but really, where it's most significant is the. What we can't see and what all he provided behind closed doors, because everybody else on the staff is a young guy. I guess Eddie's at the old head now at 54.
Right.
And Eddie, there was some scuttlebutt that not only that when Bruce Feldman dropped his name as a big candidate for the FAU job, but there was a report out of some, I don't know.
It's called a fan blog.
Yeah. FAUinyourface.com.
FAU's KSR.
Yeah. They reported that Grand was in Boca interviewing for the job, and then about an hour later, Grand tweeted out the Sunset and Independence Kansas, where I'm assuming he was hanging out with Jeremy Flax, but it, you know, pointing fingers whether or not Grand was there and he didn't like the job or they weren't going to offer enough or whether he wasn't there at all and this was – you know, that could have been just a cover-up, or that could have had some legs to it. Either way, there was not a meeting of the minds.
Or they might have been the same situation, similar to Stoops in Florida State, where he might have been just a little bit down their list.
Yeah.
So then he said, deuces.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm getting 900.
Right.
I'm probably going to get a raise out of it.
Right. But any – Grand's getting up there where he's getting to an age where, you know – it might be passing him by a little bit of the opportunities. But if he's going to take one, it's going to be one of those FAU because of those deep recruiting ties he has in Miami.
Right, right.
Or it's going to be another kind of low-level CUSA, Sun Belt job that recruits pretty much can recruit Florida.
Yeah.
So there's only a handful of those out there, really. And, you know, Florida Atlantic's one of them. Mm-hmm. So that's obviously an option in – you know, he was probably up towards the top of the list, but they decided to make the splashy hire.
Yeah.
Getting Willie Taggart.
Going with Willie Taggart. That worked well for USF and Charlie Strong, right?
I hope Willie Taggart rents. I think this is 5 head coaching gigs in 9 years. A lot of assistants don't move that much.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, he's getting a lot. And, well, hell, he probably ain't going to even get that much out of Florida State because they never signed a contract. He pulled a Billy G on him.
Yeah, I don't know how all that's going to work out. Yeah. It's probably going to get messy in the courts, if I had to imagine.
Yeah. But Mike Norvell is going to take his old spot at Florida State. That's kind of You know, he was always the guy. He was the only guy they offered. But that always felt like the
that always made the most sense.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Nick Roush, I'm a big fan of these introductory press conferences.
Oh, yeah. I appreciate that you watch all of them.
I've watched all of the Power 5 ones so far. Some of the G5 ones are hard to find, but I will try to go back and watch those too.
Are you going
to
watch all of Steve Adazio at Colorado State?
Oh, I'm not missing that. I'll probably watch that one twice.
That's a dude.
Yeah.
That's a dude. That's a dude.
Low key, Colorado State just built a new stadium.
That stadium's awesome,
it's
too.
Awesome. And
it's like the end zones. It's like sponsored by, not Sierra Nevada, but
it's something new. They just got a name for it.
New Belgium. New Belgium sponsors all of it. Yeah. So it looks pretty sick.
And they have like some big deal facilities, too. Like they've got some big money in that program. And they hired Steve Adazio, which is, he's never coached, I don't think, west of the Mississippi.
Oh, and he's such a, like, just listen to him talk.
He's a 500 coach. He's been 500. Everywhere. He's 500 at Temple, 500 at Boston College. But his guy, Urban Meyer, was involved in that coaching search for some reason. And it looks like he was stumping for him hard. And I'm happy to have Steve Adazio still where we get to see him.
That video of him at BC with the, it's a dude.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I hope that stays alive. Hope the Rams still have their dudes. The guy he replaced, Mike Bobo, going to return with Will Muschamp, best offensive coordinator hire in the history of college football?
We make fun of Muschamp a lot, but that's probably the best one he's had.
It's the best one he
could
get.
It's going to suck that he's only going to get me for 1 year, more than likely.
Yeah.
He needed him 3 or 4 years ago. But
he was at Georgia previously, correct?
Right. He was Georgia's offensive coordinator for a long time, played quarterback at Georgia. He played with Muschamp. Like, they've known each other forever.
Gotcha.
So, and they're both from Georgia, so they've probably known each other since they were high school kids.
Mm-hmm.
So, we'll see how it works out.
He's getting paid.
That's what I'm about to bring up.
Like $1 million, right?
They're not afraid to pay. $1.2 million.
And they had the USA Today had their assistant pool come out.
And T-Rob, their defensive coordinator's up there.
Man, I can't say his name. Or Arenada.
Aranda.
Aranda. Damn it. There's too many A's in there. He's the highest paid. Grand was all the way down at like 37th. He was the highest UK guy on the list. I have a feeling that will get bumped. I mean, the contract he's on now is going to bump it up regardless, but I have a feeling that'll go up.
He's got
bit.
2 years left on his deal right now. The coordinator deals don't really last more than 3 years. 3 years is kind of what they lock them into.
Right, right. But the big hires, though, to talk about, though, are in the Southeastern Conference, where which one would you like to go to first? Okay, because all three of them feature just
– we got to start with Lane.
It just means more, though, in every single one of these instances.
Yes, Lane, it just means more in a lot of different ways. But
– more hair?
More hair.
More neck? A lot more neck.
These two – entities, Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss, aren't really the beacon of stability. So this thing is going to be a roller coaster, and I am very intrigued to see how it plays out. We've already got reports that he's trying to poach Saban's strength coach, and maybe Tosh Lupoy, who used to be Saban's defense coordinator, is now with the Browns. He comes into the press conference, and these people are jacked. A guy hands him a baby, tells him to get a burner. They have the where the AD and president talk, and then he comes up. They had that in their new basketball arena, and they are selling beers, and they show you know some fraternity dudes in there crushing beers, yelling Lane, Lane, Lane. And he did a really good job at that press conference, and then he goes answers questions in you know their media.
He had the tarmac area. Line.
Yeah, had the tarmac line.
Yeah, like you know it. Wasn't my worst experience on a tarmac. Right.
Then gives a line about, you know, how he's going to use analytics, how they're going to do some unconventional things. And then he kind of took a shot. He said, most coaches are, you know, afraid of the press conference. I'm not going to be afraid of the press conference.
Oh, man, already taking Travis and Saban.
So that's going to be interesting to watch, man.
Year
two, he goes to Knoxville.
Oh, man. That'll be like 10-year – it's probably Knox's 10-year birthday.
And he also gave a line saying, do I need to rename him? What did he say?
Ox or something?
Yeah, Ox.
Change Knox to Ox.
Yeah.
Yeah, if y'all don't know, in his, what was it, 8 months in Tennessee. Tennessee was good that year. That's probably the best season they've had since Fulmer was
there. Almost beat Alabama.
Yeah, that's the closest they played him. He had his firstborn son, and he named him Knox. And then he left for USC. And Knox was the one where they had the video of the kid going crazy. And he's just chanting, SEC, SEC. But that's going to be awesome. I'm happy and I'm hopeful like it that we're going to get not the Spurrier levels of success, but that kind of I don't give a damn mentality at the podium. Because, frankly, especially SEC media days, it gets stale.
That's what I was about to say.
Just get up there and talk your crap. Be a renegade.
Because you know Sankey's going to have two eyes on every move he makes down there and on Ole Miss because they got a brand new AD too. Keith Carter is a guy who played basketball for them. If you remember the Bryce Drew shot that they show in the NCAA tournament,
yeah,
that was he was a guy guarding the inbounds pass for Ole Miss. Ooh. So he's a young guy, and this is his first big hire, and they go out and you know they decided to get splashy.
Yeah, and why not?
Why not? Well, we're just going to, like I said, it's going to be a roller coaster. And Ole Miss, Lane Kiffin's brother was there with Freeze and got a show cause.
Oh, his show cause ends, though?
Yeah, and now they hire his brother. And I'm really intrigued. All these hires, you know, I'm really intrigued to see what kind of staff they all bring
so in. There was a funny tweet that somebody connected all the dots here. So on Coach O's staff at Ole Miss, he had Matt Luke and Lane Kiffin and Hugh Freeze.
Yes.
So he had all three of those.
And Frank Wilson, who just got fired at UTSA.
So Hugh Freeze ends up taking the job for Orgeron. Matt Luke takes the job for Freeze, and now Kiffin taking the job from, I mean, it just, you know, Ole Miss. They're stuck in their own ways. But I'm excited for it. It was an exciting hire. The one that I think is hilarious, and he is going to be just a big weirdo at SEC Media Days too, and that's the Arkansas coach, Sam Pittman. What the hell were they thinking? Dude. I mean, it's so – I mean, all of these hires are so perfectly on brand.
First things first, Arkansas's AD, Hunter Yurcheck, is what? Kind of a goober.
Oh, huge like, goober.
I think you saw the videos.
Oh, my God.
That they sent out when he signed the contract, and then his press conference, he's just kind of – out there a little bit.
He's been hanging out with them pigs too much.
He wears like the Arkansas Red Blazer everywhere. And he just, I mean, that's my first takeaway watching that was, well, that guy's kind of
off.
Yeah, interesting. He won't be there very long. It was my biggest takeaway from that press conference. But then you get to Sam Pittman, and man, he's an offensive line coach. He's funny. He's got one-liners out the wazoo. He's not afraid to make fun of himself. Mm-hmm. He's holding the room. Everybody's laughing. Have a good time. They all love him. And, you know, he got emotional, too, at the same time. Mm-hmm. And he cried twice. And it was a very fun press conference to watch because he was so easy to make fun of himself, but also, you know, he was very comfortable behind the microphone. Called his wife a 6-star. I'm pulling for this guy. He's 58 years old. He'll be 59 when the season starts. Like, he never thought he was going to get this opportunity. And then it came, and I'll be cheering for him, and I hope it works out for him. It's all going to be on the staff. But for Arkansas, here's what I think they're thinking on it was long term. They wanted about 7 different guys before they got to Pittman. They all said no. Most recently was Lane Kiffin. And then this is how big this Yurcheck guy, a goober, he is. He allowed the Arkansas fan, John Neighbors, was pretty much tracking his flight.
Yeah.
And they knew he was in Boca, and they weren't shy about it. I mean, they just kind of ran the search in public. So he just didn't do a good job. But Pittman, man, I'm going to be pulling for him. I think he's going to be great. Our guy Bob Holt's going to get a lot of content from him.
Oh, he's going to get so much content from Pittman. And the thing is, so like, even though it does seem like the most out of left field type deal, Coach O is having, like, he's SEC Coach of the Year. They're the top-ranked team in America. And the teams for a long time thought, he's just a defensive line coach. Mm-hmm. He's just a recruiter. He can't be a head coach. Mm-hmm. So maybe Pittman can be that. Now, he left Arkansas in really weird circumstances the first time. When they, like, Bielema brought the entire offensive line over to say goodbye, and he still left. And then, I mean, that was just bizarre. And then he blocked him on Twitter. And Arkansas, what's their social media team doing putting that out there?
Again, I think it starts with the top. And Hunter Yurecek, he comes off to me as kind of a goober. So I'm not surprised that the rest of the ship is running
like that.
But Pittman, here's my thing with it. I think Pittman was tied to Jim Chaney, who was the offensive coordinator down there.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Chaney left. So then I think Pittman's like, well, I don't really want to work for Bielema. I don't have ties to him. So I'm going to get another job. So deuces.
Uh-huh.
And so he ended up working with Chaney later. George, I can't remember where Chaney went in between. But anyway, you know, that's just coaching. That stuff happens. And Bielema was, you know, butthurt about it. So he went over there to confront him. But it allows Arkansas to kind of get to an identity that Bielema kind of had rolling there for a couple years,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty much that the linemen are the stars. Like, they had their whole offensive line on their media guide 1 year.
I mean, Ragnow was a beast, too.
Right. Yeah. And Pittman's can really recruit offensive linemen. I can just listen to him for 5 minutes and say, man, that guy's probably a pretty damn good recruiter.
Yeah.
And so it's going to – they're going to establish, I think, an identity with him, maybe a culture. And then I think the hope is, man, just give us 5 years, a couple bowl trips, and then we can reassess 5-6 years down the road. Then we'll be in a much better place. Right now, man, they're in really deep mud. You know, the Bielema era didn't went well, and they made, you know, a really bad hire in Chad Morris.
Yeah.
And I think now they realize what they kind of have to do. I think they kind of have to, you know, just get big, get physical, get nasty, maybe kind of play like Kentucky does in the East, maybe kind of be the West version of that, and just figure it out. And I think Pittman, they're just rolling the dice on a guy that the fans are going to like.
Maybe he can do it. I mean, he at least personifies everything there is about Arkansas.
Right.
Also in the same way that Orgeron kind of personifies everything there is about the Cajun country.
All these hires are big question marks. A lot of it's going to be, you know, on pretty much anything hires, just the staffs you can make. What talent can you attract to coach there?
And, man, before you take a drink of that drink, let me just bring up our boy Eli. Eli Drinkwitz.
He's a nerd, ain't he, man?
He is such a nerd. Oh, my goodness.
I love – as a play caller, though, he's one of my favorite play callers. I've liked him since he was in the NC State. And I've got a thing for you on Drinkwitz.
Oh.
2018, he made $450,000 as a coordinator to NC State.
Okay.
This year, he made $750,000 as the head coach at App State.
Yep.
Pretty good pay raise.
Yeah, almost doubled his pay.
Guess what he's making now?
$2
million? $4
million. So, I'm not – let me get my Oklahoma math out. That's
Oklahoma makes his way into 400%
increase there, Adam Luckett?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the thing is, that's – I don't know if you'd say the going rate for an SEC coach. It's a little bit more than the going rate. But I don't know. I can't get over the dude. Just firing Barry Odom was expensive. So, like, I don't know why you – it doesn't make sense to me. None of it makes sense to me at all. I mean, this guy obviously has the upside and a lot of potential as an offensive play caller, as you said, and they kicked ass this year. He made Scott Satterfield look like a chump. But he's got 1 year head coaching experience, and you're going to go blow $4 million on him after you've already spent, what, two probably to get rid of Odom?
Here's the thing with the Missouri search. They just weren't prepared at all for the search, and you could tell with the pool of candidates he put together, their board of trustees, I think they call them board of regents.
Curators. Yeah, because that was one of those I was like, you freaking snobs. Missouri, if there's not a bunch of bigger pompous sons of I don't know what, then I'd love to find him. You'd have to go to Michigan to find him. And you know what's really going to just – I'm going to love but also hate is all of the big J's at Missouri Journalism School. All of those Syracuse, Missouri. I guess Missouri is at least a working class J school out of all of the ones. But Syracuse, Northwestern, their noses are all high up in the air. And the drink puns are flowing. They cannot help themselves. Can't help themselves. And they're going to be dealing
with – they're only going to get worse.
And they're going to get – and he's one of their own. He's going to feed them that crap. And, I mean, just hearing him talk, I just want to shove him in a locker. Like, Barry Odom right now, like, I guess he's just – like, I hope he can sit back and enjoy, like, that money. Because if I was him, I would just want to beat that dude up. Be like, really? You're going to take my school, my alma mater, fired me for this nerd?
Oh, you know Barry Odom.
Oh, God. He's fuming. You know, and Barry, I would be too.
You know he's mad, man.
And Mary Jo Perino, she's like the one Missouri fan I do know, and she's upset. Now, granted, she was in school the same time Odom was, and she knew him. So it was
– yeah.
But still, Missouri fans, you fired one of your own for this guy? This dork?
Hey, give you a couple quotes that Drinkwitz gave out. But first, let me set up how this press conference was. You're going to get a kick out of this. So they go live, and they've got that new end zone that they just finished, that new facility or whatever. Mm-hmm. They've got the smoke coming out.
Oh,
he walks through the smoke, kind of looks around. They got a guy following him the whole way, kind of looks around, walks on the field, and they're playing like the fight song in the background. And then he turns at like the 15-yard line, walks up the stadium steps. They've got cheerleaders there, you know, great cheering note. Him on, yeah. Saying M-I-Z-Z-O-U, whatever. And then they walk him into the thing. And they all, you know, clap for him. And then their president gets up there, and this guy is wired on coffee, man, just talking 100 miles an hour, this way, that way.
On coffee.
And then they got another guy who's just like their academia guy, and he just screams, you know, academics. Got the comb over, all this and that. And then they had a PA guy, and then their AD gets up there. So this was like an extravagant kind of thing they had set up. And then Drink gets on the podium. He has two quotes that I took away. You know, he had the Sun Belt snafu, obviously.
Oh, yeah, that's the main quote. That's the one quote. You put that on the headlines. New Missouri coach can't wait to win the Sun Belt.
But I think he did a good job playing it off. He said, well, I just did that, didn't I?
Yeah.
And so, anyway.
Also, a shout-out to Trevor Kelce, who said, oh, well, that's the best they can ask for at Missouri. That was a great one.
He describes his offense, and then there's two things. But, and this is word salad. Pro spread out of the no huddle with vertical passing, downhill running. Okay. So that's everything.
Play with tempo. That's new then, college basketball coach then, playing with tempo.
Then when the Q&A starts, he goes, they ask him, I don't know, about expectations or whatever. He goes, I don't feel failure. I attack success. What do you think about that?
But if you're attacking success.
That sounds like a Tony Perkis quote off Heavyweights.
Yeah, because it makes.
With skim milk.
Because if you're attacking success, you like want to beat it up. You'd want it to go away. Why would you attack success? Man, gosh, what a dork.
The only thing I worry about with Drinkwitz is biting off more than he can chew. Because he's stepping up in the talent, you know, the talent level.
In Missouri.
And I don't know if he has the connections to what kind of staff he can bring in. And I'd be worried about recruiting because that was something Odom, I think, struggled with. So recruiting and – you know,
you can only
up
get
in weight class.
So many dudes from St. Louis. You know, like that's a tough area to recruit because Nebraska, you're competing with a lot of Big Ten schools.
They have the deck stacked against them already just because of their locale in the Southeastern Conference.
Like, I guess you could, if you're smart, you do the kind of Mark Stoops pitch and tell all those Midwestern guys, come play in the SEC. You get Chicago, you get your St. Louis guys. And then maybe you have hit Texas up some. But either way, that's a tough place to sell. So I think this dork is going to get shoved in a locker. And I'm frankly happy about it because Kentucky plays him once a year. So
at Missouri this year too.
Yeah, they're going to be floundering next year. He's got to get a quarterback.
That's another thing he said multiple times is like the need for a good quarterback, lean in on your quarterback. So I fully expect them to visit the portal.
Speaking of the portal. Cats went to the portal.
They did.
They got themselves a dude. A better than a Steve Adazio dude.
Mm-hmm.
They got themselves a guy. Joey Gatewood. It happened. Was it the same night we recorded last week? Or was it a day later?
I think it was a day later.
Okay. Either way, it kind of like,
yeah, it was a day later.
It was one of those things where you were like, we kind of been waiting on this for a while. And it just, boom, random thing. You're like, Gatewood. He's walking.
We – I think we had a sense it was coming soon. We just didn't know it was going to happen that early.
Yeah, yeah. So a good time to show all your recruits 2 weeks before signing day. Hey, look at this quarterback we got waiting in the wing. B, he says he's going to try for early eligibility. I talked about the KSR football podcast. Probably not going to happen just because A, you're inside the conference. B, you need to have help from the other school. Gus Mail's on. He ain't going to do any help. It's just not going to happen. I don't expect it.
Not when they're playing next year, yeah.
No, not at all. So,
but he could use – all honesty, I think it would be good for him long-term if he had a year to just ingest the offense, get, you know, your feet wet here.
And not be just the power run specialist that he's been his career
right.
so far.
Because that's – how to play quarterback.
Because if he was eligible next year, it's still Terry's team, you know, depending on how good that knee is. And he's coming in for short yardage situations to run the damn ball.
Right.
Which, you know, that's fine. But
which is something they kind of need because this year that was a big struggle, short yardage.
Yeah, yeah. But also they didn't play Chris Rodriguez in short yardage situations until freaking November, you know. And that we can get to that another day. But I think the big thing that we got to talk about, though, is just I don't think you can cut out a better fit for a quarterback in Eddie Grant's offense than Joey Gatewood.
Here's my thing with Gatewood. Like, I think we all need to realize that he is raw, raw, raw. When you turn on his tape, you see all the good things, but the deal with him is that, you know, consistency. Can he do it over and over and over? But with all that said, he's got a ceiling higher than any quarterback this program has had since Couch. So, you see some of these plays this kid makes. Like, and when on the film room piece I wrote on him, there's one where he scrambles right, stops on a dive, doesn't step into the throw, just kind of sidearms it up there, and he throws a receiver open 65 yards down the field, touchdown. I mean, it's just like, I just had to stop it and say, well, that's just ridiculous that anybody could do that. But for him, it's all going to be on, you know, kind of a down-to-down basis. But the good thing with this offense, it's like you just said, it is tailor-made to this kid's skills, man. Power running game. He can do the zone reads. He's fleet-footed enough where he can get to the edge, beat contained defenders, get outside. He can run inside tackles on all the, you know, the power runs. And and with that, if you're running the ball heavy like that, it should open up for deep shots. And he's got a bazooka.
Oh, yeah.
So
absolute cannon.
And on some of his vertical throws, the biggest thing I was impressed with watching him is he had vertical throws where he put touch on the ball, where it was an outside fade and he laid it on the receiver's outside shoulder. So that was, to me, was very promising. If he can do that somewhat consistently, that's going to help a lot. So I am excited to see what the staff can do with a guy that has as much raw ability as he does. And then you get him for a year before you need to start him, more than likely.
See, and that's the part where I'm most excited, because those throws that you make out of the RPO, they're quick and they're not easy.
Mm-hmm.
Jared, when we do podcasts, he always talks about how much he hated throwing slants. And that's what this is. It's a lot of quick hitters and making fast reads.
Yep.
It helps having a year to get your feet underneath you. As we were kind of seeing and projecting this year for Terry Wilson, because decision-making was obviously an issue in his first year as a starter. It just was. And so on the flip side, Gatewood knows the speed. He's played in games. He knows what he's got ahead of him, but he doesn't know the offense. So you kind of get a best of both worlds if he's setting out a year.
I agree, and I think it's going to be good for him just to get your feet wet, get relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
Learn the offense. And like you said, when you turn on the tape, it's hard to find some slants or intermediate throws with him. He's got kind of a elongated motion, I guess you say.
Takes a little while. Yeah,
but
we'll wind up.
We've seen what Henshaw has done with some other quarterbacks so far. And to have a guy like that, man, it's going to really open up some things for the offense. And I'm excited to see it develop. Now, it's going to take a while to get here. But I don't think you can stress how big that recruiting win was. This staff has done a lot of good things, but let's face it, recruiting quarterbacks has not been one of them.
Nope.
But one thing they've done well is hit that transfer market, whether it be, you know, JUCO, which they've done twice, mm-hmm. and now they're doing grad transfer. I'm kind of glad that they're doing it. They're leaning into
what's working
for them. So from that stance, I think you should be excited about it.
And the thing that I think is also really significant just for the immediate future, you got another arm in there for spring.
Absolutely.
I'm not going to elaborate on detail, but it's good that this spring you're not going to have Terry Wilson out there throwing those receivers, but the guys who haven't gotten a lot of play as of late, they're going to be able to catch some passes from Joey Gatewood. So it was some exciting news last weekend and a great, as I opened saying, like it's a good momentum booster. Kentucky right now, they're trying to close in on a couple big-time athletes, one of which our boy Donut.
We just got some very good news.
Yeah, very good news. Yeah, they canceled his official visit to Florida. And as we speak, I just tweeted out a picture.
Right now, he's
with the Branham boys. And so he was with Khalil Branham. So he's
So
he's going to go from Branham to Drennan or one of the two, you know.
Right, yeah. They're both in Columbus.
Right. So that's a big one. And I'm getting really confident about that one. So
I think that Florida cancel, I think that pretty much all signs points to him signing a week from this week.
Yeah.
We're recording Wednesday. You might not hear it till Thursday.
Yeah, I heard it as like before the news kind of popped too. I was hearing they were like, well, he's always waited to sign. Was going to wait till February to sign, but I'd heard it was going to happen early. And that was my first inclination that good things were happening.
A lot of kids have that plan, but you're seeing more and more of the coaches push them.
Yeah. Cause like,
I think J.J. Weaver did that last year because he wanted to sign on his birthday.
Yeah.
And I think they were like, no, we need you to sign early.
And as Charles Walker put it, like when you do a signing ceremony, you just sign a piece of paper.
Yeah, you do.
You don't sign anything. There's not like some form that they're waiting to get. You send that in early.
Right.
So like it's not, you know, you can have your ceremony still and sign away. I just saw a tweet where Jordan Watkins is going to be at the Roosters on Dixie Highway. And I was like, damn, that would have been my kind of signing day ceremony. Hang out Roosters, get a couple cold ones.
We had a rehearsal dinner at Roosters.
Oh, that is the most Adam Luckett thing I've ever heard. That is beautiful.
Rented out the back room. It was a good time.
Beautiful. The one on Preston?
No, Fern Creek, Bartown Road.
Oh, yeah.
Right by our house.
A little classier. That back room is a little crowded, too, at the one on Preston.
Yeah, the Fern Creek one's just bigger.
Yeah, yeah. A lot more room. Great place, Roosters. You want to sponsor us?
Yeah.
By all means.
I got it in, man.
We will gladly shill your product. Because it's a pretty good one. I completely forgot what I was going to say. I was going to count up how many 4-stars Kentucky's going to end up with. So, as of right now, we have how many? They have, I think, 10 right now. So as of right – no, not 10 right now. I'm thinking that it's
going to be – They could be
10. So right now you have 1, 2, 3, 4 4-stars. Justin Rogers is a 5th if you count a 5-star.
Let's just say we're counting blue chips, so that's 4 or 5-stars.
Okay. So that's 5 4-stars. And Rogers is the one different. So Joel Williams, count him in. That's 6. You throw in 1 Vito Tisdale and Octavius Oxendine. That's 7 and 8.
You feel pretty good about all those coming.
Yeah. Ox is, but yeah, I'm pretty confident about those. Drennan is 9. And then you can get that up to 10 with 1 RJ Adams or Tyler Barron.
Did you count Joel Williams in there?
Yeah, Joel Williams was the first one I counted.
Okay.
So you get up to 10 if you just get one of the two. And I think.
And Josiah Hayes, too.
Yeah, and Josiah Hayes, who just visited last weekend. So I think you're going to get at least one of those three. Those are your 3 toss-ups. They're all announcing on signing day. All these guys except Williams. Williams is doing it the day before.
You're looking at a class pretty much ranking-wise between probably 15 and 18.
So, we'll peel behind the curtain. We're at my dad's office, Vacation Experts. Great place to get a book your trip for your next holiday, vacation, whatever. We're hanging out with my dad, and, you know, he's asking us about recruits, and Luckett's like, yeah, we're a real football school now. Everybody announces on signing day, and it's crazy.
That's what it used to be like, or it is like. Everything changed now that it's early signing day, but before, man, everybody would be on that February. ESPN would be live all day, and then they would have, you know, guys on there announcing. And you would see a lot of schools like that were sitting at 18, 19 in the recruiting rankings all of a sudden end at 4. Like Jimbo Fisher, whether Florida State or A&M, he's always got like 8, 9 guys signing on National Signing Day.
Yeah.
Or deciding. And now Kentucky's kind of joining that party where they're in play for a lot of guys. Like just on that list, you got Joe Williams, Octavius Oxendine, Drennan, Josiah Hayes, Barron, RJ Adams. I mean, all those guys are deciding on the 18th. So it's going to be a busy day following along.
Think about, I just thought of this. What if you're Will Healy and you're coaching Charlotte in the Bahamas Bowl on Friday at 2 and you've got National Signing Day? Are you in Charlotte, or are you – I guess you're –
No, they're down there on the Bahamas.
Right. So, like – That's a weird
setup. They
ran
out of conference. Here's what happens, because Chris Vanini, who writes for The Athletic, is kind of like their G5 writer and coach and carousel guy. He, what's it called when you go in with somebody? You're embedded with them or whatever?
Oh, yeah.
He embedded with SMU right after they hired Sonny Dykes. So he had only been on the job for a week, and they were on location for the bowl game. I believe they played that night.
Oh, God.
So what they did was they were at, I don't know, a Hilton or whatever. They were in Texas at the Frisco Bowl. So they're outside Dallas.
They just had that fax machine hooked up to the
– So they were just locked into a conference room. They had, I guess, like their big board or whatever, and they were on their phones and had their computers out. And it was like 20 of them all in there just crossing, just figuring out. And that's what you have to do. I mean, it stinks that's – the situation, but it is what it is. So that's what they're doing. They're going to be in the Bahamas at a hotel room, and they'll have something rented out, and then business as normal, just on a different location.
Interesting. Oh, we're getting to some interesting parts too around signing day. Where who is this kid? I think this kid is a Alabama commit who's talking to Auburn coaches. Oh, the signing day shenanigans where people are Gus Malzahn's trying to pull an offer and he's like committed to Alabama. That's hilarious. Oh man, that's funny. Just the signing day shenanigans. We're gonna get some good ones. Hopefully,
and there's usually a surprise too.
Hopefully, there's not any with Kentucky. Any bad surprises? Your Justin Rogers of the world and all those big guys. They seem pretty steady. You know, I haven't heard any scuttlebutt that anything that. I'm sure there's going to be other schools still pursuing. I'm sure Tennessee's going to be in the air with a lot of these guys because Kentucky's competing with Tennessee on a lot of guys, and so I think they're gonna try to be doing some 11th hour stuff.
They've already beat them out for a lot of guys too.
Yeah, they've beaten them out for Rogers, Ripka, who even did the diss on Tennessee in his commitment video. They're going toe to toe with Ox, and they're going toe to toe with Barron. So, all defensive line guys.
Mm-hmm.
So, they're going to try to do some funny business at the 11th hour. But I think Kentucky, at least it feels like they're in a good space with all of them. Man, we were talking with Lackford. And if y'all don't know Dave Lackford, follow at Rivals Dave. Dude, Dave knows these kids better than anybody. He basically is one of the big kids. So, they talk to him all the time. He has great relationships. And he was on Monday. Tuesday. I don't know. These days, they're all running together right now. Was just like convinced that Barron's going to UK. But you got the dad factor. And like dad's going to get fired if Barron doesn't come there.
Yeah, there's a lot going on there.
There is so much funny business that could happen with there. You never know. Which I think this brings us to something that I've wanted to listen to since we were talking Sunday about the bowl games, because peel behind the scenes, you know, we'll know some stuff and we'll try to get ahead of the curve. And we knew pretty early that Kentucky was going to the Gator Bowl. And you're like, all right, I'll do a little ditty on Indiana, you know, no problem. And then the rug got pulled out from under us.
I did.
We're not going to Jacksonville.
I had Indiana figured out. I had the game plan written out. I had everything. I was crunching tape. Might have made a couple gifts already.
Oh, you'd already made gifts too? That is a kick in the teeth.
So anyway, we had what I'm what I've been calling Fulmergate.
Fulmergate.
Now let's rewind a little bit.
Okay.
Let's talk about Philip Fulmer.
Okay, let's talk about him.
Philip Fulmer is as bit Tennessee as it gets.
Yep.
He was an assistant. He played there, was an assistant there for a long time, took over, was head coach there for almost 20 years, won a national title, handful of SEC titles. Mm-hmm. Tennessee's last heyday was under him. They ran him out of town for the most part, and they sucked ever since.
Yep.
So Tennessee fires Butch Jones. John Curry's AD. The search is a mess after the Schiano situation. Mm-hmm. Fulmer, earlier in that season, became like a advisor, I guess you would say, for the athletic department.
They gave him a Steve Spurrier job.
Right. Which is kind of just,
figurehead.
You're in the circle, but you don't have any responsibilities. Just hang out.
Yeah.
That's Philip Fulmer ain't just hanging out. So Philip Fulmer makes some relationships with the president or whatnot. Tries to get involved in the search. Curry doesn't tell anybody because he knows what Fulmer's doing. So he goes out and interviews Mike Leach, offers Mike Leach the job. What does Fulmer do? He steps in, pulls a rug out from under the Leach hire, gets Curry fired. He is named the temporary AD. Goes on, hires Jeremy Pruitt. 2 years later, I don't think you're temporary after 2 years.
No. He is the head honcho.
So this is a guy that is just kind of running things right now, and he's not in any way, shape, or form a typical athletic director. So we saw this in the past. This used to be how you be ADs. You just be a former coach.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's kind of like you get trained for it.
Well, and a fun thing about Fulmer, too, is that many people thought that all of that disaster that was happening when Fulmer stepped in to be temporary AD, they thought it was going to be temporary because he was going to be head coach again, that he was going to just pull Barry Alvarez and say, you know what, I'm actually going to go back to being the head coach because Jeremy Pruitt, you lost to Georgia State and BYU in a season. So 2 months ago, people were like, Fulmer, if he didn't – they lose this one, Fulmer might be back before the year's over with. And sure enough, Jeremy Pruitt, he's kind of he's the wheels have kind of – he's got the wrench out and he screwed him on a little bit tighter.
Let's go back to this Jeremy Pruitt hire. For all intents and purposes, that first year they pulled two upsets out of their ass, Auburn, Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, they had, three or four of the worst losses in – Tennessee history, conference losses. Mm-hmm. They got smoked by Missouri. They got smoked by Vanderbilt.
Yeah, third loss in a row to Vandy. Ugh.
And they got smoked by Alabama. And they got smoked by Georgia. So they got their teeth kicked in a lot of ways. So what happens at Tennessee? Fulmer and Pruitt decide that it's time to clean house a little bit. Tyson Helton, they have a mutual agreement. He leaves for Western. They switch staff around. He goes out and hires him an offensive coordinator.
Who?
Jim Chaney is a very good offensive coordinator. And you had just pulled up that list. Jim Chaney makes over $2 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
He's not that good.
He was formerly at Georgia, and right. That was when they were trying to get Grand. Chaney was the one who left.
Chaney's just kind of a pro's pro. He's very dependable, but he's not, he's not a savant in any way. So they're overpaid for this offensive coordinator. Jeremy Pruitt, when he got the job, said, I'm calling plays. I'm a ball coach. I will call both sides if I could, but I'm calling the defense.
Jim Chaney's ranked 11th on that list, right. Making 1.5 a year.
Right, and it's going to go – I think it goes to 2 eventually at the end of the contract. Mm-hmm. So then they hire – so that doesn't work out. He doesn't want him calling defense anymore. So they go get Derek Ansley.
Yes.
So all of a sudden –
former UK coach.
All of a sudden, 1 year
– getting $1 million.
Fulmer decides just to overhaul the staff. And it starts out pretty crappy with this all-star staff. Like we talked about, mm-hmm. 2 non-Power 5 losses. You could consider BYU in there. But anyway, they're home favorite. Both those games lose them.
Yeah.
Couldn't start year two any worse.
Nope.
Credit to them. They rally the troops. Thanks probably mostly to that all-star staff. And close in a hot fashion. So it comes to bowl time. we knew Kentucky, if they wanted to get the Gator Bowl, they would probably need Auburn to pass somebody.
Yeah, they needed somebody in the top 10.
That didn't happen. Championship Saturday kind of went the worst way it could in that regard, especially after Oregon won. You knew it was, you know, the chances were probably slim to none. So anyway, that comes out. But then we start to get the whiff of Tennessee's going to the Music City Bowl. That's where they want to go. Kentucky's going to Gator. So we're all starting to get excited. We have Tennessee's rival site writes a full Music City Bowl story and starts doing game breakdowns of Louisville. Wonder where they got that information.
Yeah. Huh.
A source told The Athletic that Tennessee's going to Music City Bowl. Kentucky leaks out that they're going to the Gator Bowl. Everybody's starting to get the Gator Bowl. And that they're going to play Indiana, a Kentucky rival, something that they're going to be excited about, and what should be a decent matchup. All of a sudden, at the last hour.
Basically, the last phone call the SEC made that says, all right, we good? We good? We good? Somebody said, nope, not good.
Here's Adam Luckett's theory. Nick, now before I say this.
Okay.
Remember how I talked about Steve Spurrier in Georgia?
Yeah.
Fulmer's up there with me. Okay. I respect the hell of what he did. And Tennessee probably did the wrong thing for firing him. But I don't really like him. And I don't think he really likes Kentucky all that much either. I think he gets great pride in never lost to Kentucky. Gets great pride in having that streak. And quite frankly, that he gets involved right after, you know, Kentucky beats them in 2017 and kind of gets that, you know, where they're cranking up in Tennessee's.
Mm-hmm.
I don't find that, you know, there's a lot of reasons he got involved, but I think that might have had some reason to do with it. So he takes over, and since he's taken over, Kentucky, best team ever, loses to Tennessee.
Yep.
In basketball, Kentucky had Tennessee beat in that Southeastern Conference tournament, choked it away in the last 2 minutes in Nashville, and that is Kentucky's tournament, and Tennessee kind of took that over.
Yep.
This year, he beats Kentucky. They go on the road. Tennessee beats Kentucky in a close game. So since he has taken over, Tennessee's kind of dunked on Kentucky. I think this was Philip Fulmer seeing Kentucky rise up and getting a chance to dunk on them again. I think he set this up. I think he knew the Gator Bowl wanted him. I think he got reassurances from the SEC office that said, you know, these are the rules. So if that's where you want to go, this is where you go. It's not written in permanent ink. Like, Brett McMurphy is not getting that source from out of nowhere.
No, Brett McMurphy.
It's not just he knows one guy in the SEC office. That's probably because he sent the tweet out twice. In the morning, he says, this is what I'm hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And then he tries to woge the thing.
Yeah.
Which is probably a shot at ESPN for firing him.
Yeah.
Tries to get at them early. So I don't think he's making this up. This is what was going to happen. And all of a sudden, Tennessee comes in the last minute. I think he wanted to do that. I think he looked at it as a shot to kind of stiff-arm Kentucky, and I don't think a normal AD pulls that move. If that was not what they wanted to do, if they were still on question, that wouldn't have gotten leaked out. Their rival site wouldn't have wrote a full Music City Bowl story. The Athletic wouldn't have said, we're here in Music City Bowl. Philip Fulmer is making all the football decisions, and it's just my theory that he uses as a chance to kind of push Kentucky down a little bit.
Hmm.
And what it gets to is after we all have Tennessee writing all these articles like that. We got the Knoxville Sentinel. I think that's what their newspaper's called. Knoxville something.
Yep, that's right.
Wes Rucker, who's like their big recruiting site guy, he writes a big op-ed piece.
We're Tennessee, by God, and we're going to take what we want. He is like Clay Travis, he was formerly that, but now Clay's big national guy. Wes is the closest thing they have to like a Matt or, you know, like a good fanboy.
Mm-hmm.
And he says he's not a fanboy, but he's a big fanboy.
Mm-hmm.
I
like Wes, but he compared Tennessee's basketball team to 96 Kentucky.
Oh, yeah. So I'm going to dunk on him for eternity because that is just a horrible take.
And
people will never forget that take.
And then the athletic David Ubbin, who does a very good job, he had in his piece, it was said, Fulmer told him, boosters and others decided that we wanted to make a decision. That's Philip Fulmer doing what he wants to do. He's in control, and he used it as, you know, a move, I think, to kind of put down Kentucky a little bit. Because Tennessee is on the climb up now.
Yeah. They're trying to get out of the sewer.
Their goal is to win the SEC. To win the SEC, they're going to have to beat Florida and Georgia. But they got to knock other pegs out of the way before they can really get to that level.
Mm-hmm.
And a thorn in their side right now is what I think Kentucky's doing. Now, it hasn't shown up on the field yet. And that's at the bottom line, Kentucky, go out and beat these guys.
Yeah.
You got to stop losing to them. If you beat them, well, this isn't a discussion. But I think it's going to be something that, quite frankly, that they'll probably sell to Tyler Barron. Excuse me, forgot his name for a second.
Yeah.
And I think it's something they'll use, and I think they get that. I think it's no secret that Tennessee, one of their biggest things right now is saying, well, you know, we're on a rebuild, but we still own Kentucky. And my biggest thing from this is realize who Philip Fulmer is. I think he used it as a chance to kind of knock Kentucky down a couple pegs.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope Kentucky uses it as motivation, because I know it pissed me off. I think it was premeditated. And bottom line is, you got to start beating these guys. Mark Stoops has done a lot of great things.
Yeah, Tennessee beating them, that's...
We need to start... Kentucky needs to start beating them.
Now, counterpoint, I think some of... Like, they had a good excuse for why they would want a last-minute change of heart, because I don't think they had too many fans motivated to just go to the Music City Bowl. Like, it's just, you know, they're like, oh, Music City Bowl, we're better than that. In Gator Bowl, it's in Florida, so it just seems like it's a better bowl. Now, as far as matchups and all that goes, I'm sure these bowls aren't very happy about it. In fact, I mean, Kentucky's going to end up, it's going to be a more difficult game against Virginia Tech, but they're getting a much better opponent to beat out of this.
The Music City Bowl is pissed, I guarantee.
Yeah, because they're getting music.
Behind closed doors, I bet they called and made the most noise out of all of this.
Well, I mean, hell, Mississippi State played Louisville, won a bowl game like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
It was Lamar's last game. What, 2017?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You had Tennessee, Louisville. Louisville's going to bring a decent amount of fans, but Tennessee was going to sell that joint out. That was going to be close to a full house.
Right. So, I'd be – now, did you see the picture that Knoxville News Sentinel used on their story with Phil Fulmer smiling?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It was the most – I can just hear you screaming right now.
Yeah, I read it. I did. I saw it.
Yeah, he was throwing stuff at the TV as it happened.
I saw it.
Call me
conspiracy theorist as you want. That's just me reading the tea leaves. I am pretty involved in all this stuff. I follow it all. I'm swimming in waters a lot of people don't get close to just from my involvement and how consumed I am with college football. But, man, I think it was Fulmer trying to – you know, kind of toy with Kentucky a little bit. And Barnhart, I'm not sure what he could have done. I mean,
he couldn't have. Yeah,
and I won't be surprised if they maybe change up how they do this in the future.
As in, like, how they – or how is they're assigned?
Yeah. Or maybe the rules are a little different. Maybe they don't – maybe they tell everybody, let's not leak anything out anymore or –
Yeah, I think in general, too, just the bowl selection process is annoying as hell. Well, like, just
ESPN kind of messes it up for everybody because they go on for 8 freaking hours.
Just make it a selection show. You get exponentially better ratings if you do the playoff, the New Year's Six bowls, and then just announce the rest of them.
And then talk for 3 hours.
Yeah.
But they try to stretch it out, and so that's what happens when you get it stretched out. You can have a situation like this.
Now, I would like to think that – I would love to believe your conspiracy theory, Luckett. I think the truth is somewhere in between the rational explanation and Fulmer wanting to dunk on him. As far as pitching it to a recruit, I don't think Tyler Barron gives a damn about Belk Bowl versus Gator Bowl versus Music City Bowl. Like, you know, they're 7-5 going to bowl game. Not much has changed. You're splitting hairs at that point. That's not going to make a significant difference in your recruiting. But I can't blame Tennessee if they're wanting to use every single advantage.
My thing is, I think they'll use it, but I don't think that's the reason they did it. I think they just did it because they could.
Right, right.
It's my thing. I think he did it because he could.
Yeah, which I wouldn't put past him at all. Now, with that being said, Belk Bowl doesn't scream Charlotte. Or, you know, it doesn't scream like, oh, you're in a Florida bowl game, but I'm happy to be hanging out in Charlotte for a few days versus Jacksonville. Now, granted, last time I wasn't out at the beaches, you know, so I didn't get the full taste, but I'm excited for a new city.
Have a nice little downtown life.
Yeah, and we're going to be
right, NBA game
right smack dab in the middle of it. I'm going to be doing radio down there. Me and TJ, we got clearance to bring the
Dugan
equipment
hook
down
you
there.
Up.
Dugan's hooking us up.
There you go.
So y'all can come hang out with us in hotel lobbies at the crack of dawn, talking chalk. But, and I'm also excited that you're playing Virginia. Like, there's a good storyline in this game. It ain't the same as, you know, oh, playing Indiana. I would get annoyed by all the basketball crap. And, like, you know, I don't want to be, like, I know better than you at football. But there's nothing worse than just, like, the easy ESPN boilerplate bullcrap talking points that you would get. The bullcrap talking point now you get is Bud Foster's last game. And that's a real legit talking point. Dude's a legend. I cannot name very many, like, you think of Buddy Ryan. You know, there aren't too many people where you know them as coordinators. Now, Buddy obviously went on to coach elsewhere, but this is a dude who's a career coordinator, who's a legend as a coordinator. He's going, and his last test is against Bodenball, which is no easy test. They got the horses probably to do pretty well against it as well, so I think it's going to be a fun game. It's going to be a lot more fun than Indiana. Honestly, I know Indiana, like, you know, they're an 8-win team.
8-4.
I think Kentucky would have just beat the snot out of them. Just absolutely rolled
them. You could argue that they were a little bit of paper champion because their wins were against some bad teams.
Bad Big Ten West teams. Like, oh, you beat Nebraska.
Here's the thing with Kentucky and Indiana. Kentucky wanted to play in that Gator Bowl. And that Indiana buildup, I would have been interested to see how, like, excited it got both fan bases, how many would have traveled, and what that game type of atmosphere would have been like, if it would have been fun and exciting for the fan base, and then if that would have maybe put some more pressure on Kentucky to maybe want to start that basketball series up again.
Or make it give yourself a non-Maction game.
Right.
Bring that back, because, like as Freddie said on Monday, that was their Louisville game back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was who that was their other
right,
rival.
It was.
That was outside the SEC.
It was.
So
battle for the beer barrel.
Yeah, well, were they beer barrel too, mm-hmm. Indiana? So we had two beer barrels.
I think it was bourbon barrel was Tennessee. Maybe no, Indiana's bourbon barrel, Tennessee's beer barrel. My bad.
Okay.
My fault.
But still, that would have been something.
But straight up, I think from a schematic standpoint, I think Kentucky might have had an easier time moving the ball against Indiana. Whereas Indiana's pass game is a little more scarier than what Virginia Tech's offense does. But you're going to play Virginia Tech kind of in their backyard, man.
Yeah.
Charlotte is ACC territory.
Tom Fornelli made a funny joke when he ranked every bowl game. And he's like, the Belk Bowl's been played since 2001, and this is the 83rd time Virginia Tech's played in it.
Second time under Fuente they've been in.
Yeah,
it's like
yeah, and he's only been there 4 years. So
that – Belk to them is Music City to Kentucky.
Yeah, yeah. That's their wheelhouse. But I think it's great for fans who want to make a quick road trip. Even if you have to work on Monday, you get out of work, you drive to Charlotte, you go to the game, you party your ass off New Year's Eve.
6 hours from Lexington.
Yeah, not far at all. You party your ass off New Year's Eve after Kentucky wins, you drive home New Year's Day. Not bad at all.
Mm-hmm.
Not bad at all. So I think that's – the convenience of it is nice. The different, just something different is kind of nice. And I love the New Year's Eve kick time. Noon on New Year, because that's what Gator was first time around. And I
11
loved,
a.m. then.
It was 11?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man, that was real early. That's why.
That was too early.
That's why my wife was so hungover.
That was too early, man.
At like 10 o'clock. Yeah. But no, this I'm going to thoroughly enjoy my experience, and I know you were banking a lot on Jacksonville.
I was. And unfortunately, looks like I am going to have to miss first bowl game in a while. But I'm going to Vegas.
Oh, yeah.
So I can't be too sad.
No,
about it.
No. Oh, you can place some wagers on it. There you go. On Kentucky and the Belt Bowl. 3 points, give it to me.
But then I'm going to have to go back and cash it if I do that.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
So I'll be betting on the Bahamas Bowl while I'm out there and some of the Las Vegas Bowl.
You're going to be there for Vegas Bowl. You get Chris Peterson versus
old school, in his last game.
That's going to be good. Cool. In Las Vegas Bowl, that game's popping. That's typically a game. Dude.
When they get in the stadium, it's going to be one of the bigger bowl games.
I was looking through the slate today. Look at
the bowl slate.
This year's Cheez-It Bowl.
Oh, yes.
Is going to last year's Cheez-It Bowl right in the groin.
Probably my favorite matchup.
Are you kidding me? They put Mike Leach against a triple option team.
That Air Force team's good.
Oh, my gosh. That is going to be – I cannot wait. Because I think that's actually – it's like the 27th, I believe, is when that game's being played. And it's Pac-12 after dark schedule time.
Yes, it's late.
It's real late.
Friday night.
Oh, man. That's going to be great. That's going to be great. That's why I'm getting into Charlotte. I'm getting in that Friday. So I'm going to have some cold domestics at a local watering hole.
There you go.
Oh, watch that game. And then the next day, you got Kentucky Louisville Cards Cats. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. It's playoffs at the same time as Kentucky Louisville.
Don't get me started on this, but we're going to start on it. Kentucky Louisville tips at 3:45. LSU Oklahoma kick at 4 p.m.
What the hell? Are you
kidding me? Who the hell was thinking that? Jesus freaking Christ. This is Kentucky Louisville basketball. Are you kidding me? We're in the playoff? I would rather watch the playoff.
College basketball needs a scheduling intervention. Baylor played in their conference championship game last week with a college football playoff bid on the line. At the time they kicked back home in Waco, they were tipping against Arizona.
An Arizona team that's top 25.
Their biggest non-con game.
Of the year.
Of the season. So, yes, I am irked at this. Usually what they've done is it's led into the Sun Bowl, that game. So, it's played at, like, noon. So, it's out of the way. For some reason, the Sun Bowl's not on New Year's Eve this year, I don't think. And they have a doubleheader for basketball. Somebody's playing at 1, and then Kentucky, Louisville playing at 3:45.
Yeah, Sun Bowl is on New Year's Eve at 2. So, they would be... I mean, in theory.
They're on New Year's Eve.
Which,
right.
I mean, even if they.
Which is why, didn't they just play this game on New Year's Eve? That's what I can get
at. And if they were leading into the Sun Bowl, then Kentucky's playing their bowl game at the same time as the UK U of O game.
Well, that you might have seen more fight out of Kentucky.
To get out of that belt bowl. Yeah. Either way, what the hell? Get this basket.
I wish they would have done that because then we might have had some.
Between Fulmer and Mitch. Yeah. Oh, man, that top button. Mitch unbuttoned that top button. Be going down. That's like taking the gloves off.
They would have had to call in some muscle. Mitch would have had to call in some muscle. Whoever Mitch's muscle is, he would have had to call it in.
Look, I made this. I wrote this post like 2 years ago. Kentucky Louisville needs to be played this Saturday before the Army-Navy game. There's no reason why it shouldn't be played this Saturday. Absolutely zero.
I have another suggestion.
Rivalry Saturday.
They're getting more open with the scheduling, like Kentucky opening with the Champions Classic, playing conferences are moving, starting games earlier. Why not play it on Super Bowl weekend, Saturday?
That's what they did with Arkansas, Kentucky back in the day. Now, the reason why I think they would be hesitant, Cal and all them, they get all fussy. They don't want to. For some reason,
Houston, Kentucky was that game.
Yeah, and
when they had Hakeem the Dream.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know why they get all like, ooh, we're in the conference. We got to stay in the conference. Like, what's the big damn deal? But either way, there are much better solutions than playing this game. The biggest game of the basketball season in the Bluegrass is during football bowl season when nobody else cares. And frankly, it's ridiculous. And I'm sick and tired of it. And I can't beat this drum any louder.
It's not just Kentucky, though. Cincinnati Xavier, which is one of the other big non-conference rivalries.
Oh, I didn't even pay attention.
They play on Championship Saturday every year. So, like,
I didn't even know
for
it happened.
Most part. So, what the hell is college basketball? They need an intervention. I don't know what else to say. It's ridiculous.
Mike Trangheesy, get on this.
Kentucky playing. This is 3 years in a row. Kentucky's played a game on that conference championship Saturday. Like, why?
Yeah,
I know Kentucky's a long shot most of years to get into the SEC championship, but why even risk it? It's just stupid. Just why?
Play on Sunday. What's wrong with that?
Or Friday. There's teams playing that Friday
Louisville
night.
Louisville played Friday night. They were hammered. They were having a good time.
There's a bunch of games on Friday night. No, it's just.
Did you? All right. Did you watch?
College basketball needs scheduling intervention.
Did you watch any of the Fairleigh Dickinson game?
I didn't watch a second of it. I'm on. That's just out of spite.
I had it on my second TV.
I will not watch it.
It was on the second TV, but it was muted for the SEC championship.
Right. I have family Christmas, so I was out. But we got back in time for the second half of the SEC championship.
Oh, you're not. But you're not going to watch.
But I'm not turning
Fairleigh
on
Fairleigh Dickinson.
There's no point in playing that game at that time. But I rest my case.
Yep. Okay, we're getting fired. We need to end on a lighter note. You had some things written down here that I don't know if we got to all of them. Did we get to all of them? Did we get to everything?
Well, I have not. Oh. I listened to your all's podcast with Freddie. Uh-huh. Welcome back, Panther. And I turned it off because I wanted to save this about the 25. Y'all start talking about all SEC selections.
Yes. Okay.
So this is the coaches team. Like Freddie likes to say, it's SID team.
Yes.
So I am saving my reactions because before, I think we talked about this at our first episode, these all SEC selections, and mm-hmm. I get pretty worked up about this.
Okay. So
I haven't looked at this coach's team. AP did a very good job. I didn't have much issues with theirs, but I have not looked at it. I know that Duffy's second team, so I saw that. It's hard with Kentucky Twitter not to see that.
Yeah.
But I haven't looked at anything else. So this is going to be organic, Adam Luckett's organic reactions to these all SEC teams.
All right. Would you like me to read them to you? Would that be best, or do you want to go through them yourself?
You can read. Okay, let's read them. Let's read the first team, and then I'll look at the second and third and tell you how I feel about them.
So first team offense tight end, Kyle Pitts, Florida.
Good decision.
Andrew Thomas, Georgia, of course, and Jedrick Wills, your two tackles. Makes perfect sense.
Yes.
Another offensive lineman from Alabama, Alex Leatherwood.
No, that's three tackles. Okay. Okay.
Trey Smith, offensive guard. Yes. You understand.
He had a good season. Yeah, I could argue either way.
Center from Louisiana State University, Lloyd Cushenberry III.
Lloyd Cushenberry is high on draft boards with what I've seen. I would have had Drake Jackson should have been first team center, so yeah, okay.
But you could understand that maybe perhaps.
Yes. I'm trying there's another I would have had him and Trey Hill from Georgia ahead of him, but okay. You can argue that. I hate that they put three tackles. How do the coaches put three tackles on there, but the AP has two guards, two tackles, and a center?
This is the SEC. Just figure it out. They don't need to be offensive linemen. Put them at their positions.
Okay.
Yeah, stupid. At wide receiver, Alabama's Jerry Jeudy. Duh. Jamar Chase from LSU.
You know, no doubter. He should have been the first one on there.
They only have two wide receivers on this team. Running back, Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Yes, well-deserved.
DeAndre Swift from Georgia. He's banged up, but.
Yeah, he was the best back when he's healthy. Georgia just didn't give him well enough. I could see that.
Joe Burrow at quarterback, Lynn Bowden at all-purpose.
Yeah, good job.
Yep. It's okay.
Offensive line, other than the offensive line, I'm fine with that.
Okay. Defense, the SEC Defensive Player of the Year, Derek Brown, Auburn.
Yep.
Also a defensive line, Auburn's Marlon Davidson.
Yep.
Jonathan Grenard, Florida.
Yep.
Javon Kinlaw, South Carolina.
I actually kind of like that. I thought Kinlaw got kind of slighted.
Yeah, because he played like a monster.
But he was an animal with what I've seen of him, so I like that.
Alabama linebacker, Anfernee Jennings.
Okay.
LSU linebacker, Kalavon
Chasen.
God, what a name.
That's two outside linebackers.
Yeah, and the third linebacker, Nick Bolton from Missouri.
Yes, he needs it. Yes, Bolton was awesome this year.
I'm surprised they didn't give it to Garrett, too, just even in half a season. Defensive backs, J.R. Reed from Georgia.
Okay, safety.
Grant Delpit, safety from LSU.
Delpit had a weird – he was good, but he had a weird year.
He's a name that they were going to put in no matter what. Xavier McKinney from Alabama.
Well, that's three safeties, so yeah, they already messed up.
C.J. Henderson from Florida.
No. How's Derek Stingley not on this list? Oh, my God.
Special teams.
They literally just Rodrigo. Took the preseason team and moved them to the
yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Punter, Braden Mann.
Oh.
And return specialist, Jaden Waddle.
Yeah, Waddle's a bad boy.
Yeah,
man.
Waddle's a bad man. But Braden Mann, he's Duffy's numbers are better.
They took the preseason list and moved it to the postseason list.
Yeah. Yeah, and Drake Jackson didn't even make second team offense.
Is it Trey Hill?
No, it was Damian Lewis. Or no, sorry, Landon Dickerson, Alabama.
What? I thought he played guard.
I like this guy from Auburn that made it. Prince Tega Wanahagu. I don't know how to say that.
That's another preseason, postseason.
Albert O made it as second team tight end. Did he even? He was hurt for half the year, wasn't he?
Yeah, and he wasn't even.
He wasn't even that good this year.
Texas A&M had a freshman tight end. It probably should have made
that
it.
That dude was a stud. It was Stenberg, also a second team selection. Tua, he made second team, and I think rightfully so, even when he was out. Daniel Batuli's a defensive guy on there. There's your Stingley in at second team. Nigel Warrior, I thought he was one of the tougher guys Kentucky played this year.
He was good.
Yeah.
I'm trying to pull it up right now. I'm
having here, if you would like
it.
To just scroll through here, by all means.
Let me see here. Okay, we're on second team. Albert O, that's bad. Prince Tega, not good. Damian Lewis was really good. That's a guy Kentucky recruited that they almost had, and he was been awesome for LSU.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Edwards, he deserved it. Kylin Hill led the league in rushing.
Yeah, I'd say that
Najee Harris had a good year.
Yeah.
You know, going down here.
I love your fury when they get the positions wrong.
Yeah, it makes me. I'm good to see Batuli on there. He deserved it.
Yeah, he's a bad Kentucky. Man. He absolutely did.
Derek Stingley and Trayvon. Who are the corners on top? Trayvon Diggs and Stingley should have been the two corners. They only put one. Yeah, C.J. Henderson. Good job, dumbasses.
Henderson declared for the draft.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, saw that.
Doesn't tackle.
Lynn Bowden.
Max Duffy, second team.
Lynn Bowden declared for the draft, too. He's playing in the Bowl.
How the hell do we have five return specialists on here?
The ties aren't
broken. Oh, they had ties.
Yeah.
Number. Okay. Yeah, just – and we're going to revisit this come – July media days.
Yeah. But AP, though, they had four first teamers. That's only happened. That's only the third time in school history.
Kentucky, yeah.
So AP got something right.
I had a stat I pulled up the other day. It was when they started doing the AP poll, I guess, like 86 or something. And John Schlarman was a player. He made first team all SEC. I believe they had six in the years before Schlarman showed up, and six since 2016. They've had four, I believe. Toth.
Offensive lineman.
Yeah, Toth, Bunchy, Stenberg, Drake Jackson.
Warford wasn't one?
He was one of the five before. They had five all-SEC.
Oh, before Stoops. And then you – okay, I see what you're saying now.
So
– man.
Because that was always a position because they had that long drought of offensive linemen drafted.
Yeah, Warford was like the first guy drafted in like 20, 30 years.
And now they're becoming like kind of a factory almost. They're producing really good linemen. And John Schlarman, he doesn't get enough credit, man, especially nationally, that there's offensive line coaches they talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were left off the Joe Moore Award this week. It's got a lot of people irate. I thought they should have been in the top four. I could argue. Everybody on that panel that talks about Oregon says they're, like, the best ever.
But also, who are they blocking?
You know, I don't necessarily see it every time I watch them. I know Penei Sewell's, like, the real deal Holyfield. But they say they cover up a lot of holes for, I guess, I think it says more about Oregon's play calling, maybe, that they're covering up that many holes, if that's true.
Yeah.
So we'll see. LSU and Alabama got in there. I thought they should have been in there over Alabama, but Jedrick Wills has been a boss.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
Yeah, he's going to be a top 10 pick.
That's crazy.
So I wasn't too upset about that. I know some people were. It's hard to grade. You can't just grade them off.
Yeah.
Just stats. I saw some – Kyle Tucker sent the stats out, and I think that does point to their favor, but I also think, man, the way the offense was tailored, people keep telling me 8-9 in a box, and I told people that's exactly what Kentucky wanted.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted 8-9 in a box. If you put 8-9 in the box, they were going to get big plays on you. So, but either way, they've been a finalist, I think, twice for that now in the last 3 years, so they're doing big things.
Yeah, yeah. They're moving in the right direction. Now, we need to start moving to get on out of here. It's good to hear Fiery Luckett. You can tell, like, we're getting the itch. Signing day's approaching. Trying to blog till we fall.
Should be a big one next week. It's here on 11 personnel.
Yeah, it's going to be a big one next week because I think we're going to get the Panther on and do just make it our signing day special. So we're going to figure out the logistics behind that. But Kentucky's going to have a lot more commits. It's going to be – crazy. That's when we're going to go through, and we're just going to talk about the guys and what we like about them. You've been doing some previews as well. I think Freddie's going to start chipping in some as well. But I know you had one on your boy Ernie the other day. I know you're a big fan
of Ernie Sands.
Big fan of Ernie. But we'll be able to go and talk about our favorites, just kind of going through the class. So that'll be a good time.
And we'll touch – I'm going to touch on kind of where it ranks in the SEC, especially this defensive line, Hall.
Yeah, they're good.
This is going to be up there as good as anybody in this class, rankings-wise. It's going to be up there with a bunch of blue buds.
Keep Derek LeBlanc.
Yeah.
Some guys can go, let's keep Derek LeBlanc. Let's
Kentucky, get him paid. And this coaching carousel, now it gets interesting. The head coaches are out of the way. Now that staff turnover starts happening. NFL moves are going to happen here soon. So, Kentucky, they've lost Dean Hood. They dodge a bullet, it looks like, with Eddie Grant.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on to everybody else because the staff is really damn good.
Yeah.
And you don't want to lose them.
Until then, enjoy your Christmas shopping experience. I'm sure plenty of you are still getting things done. We're in the process of getting our holiday stuff together. We're getting our recruiting together. It's a busy time of the year. And we thank you for taking, a little more than an hour to spend some time with us, talking football, making fun of SEC football coaches and whatnot. It's been a good day. We'll see you next week. After signing day, Kentucky's going to have a football recruiting class. Go Cats, go Kroger.